Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show about the Fallout games. I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael.
This is episode 12?
Yes, it is.
The big old 1-2.
The big old dozen.
Oh, the dirty dozen. In this episode, last time we went to MODOK, in this episode we're going to Vault City.
Mm-hmm.
Vault City is... It's a big deal, huh?
It's big. It's the... Possibly the largest, well, I think in terms of areas in, like, the first game, we had big combat-y areas, and so on. I think this is the first time in these games where we've hit something that I think really feels like not just an anticipation of the types of places that will show up in RPGs in the future. Mm-hmm. But this is like the closest, right? It doesn't feel so much like an anticipation as it is like, oh, this is just a version, right? This is a prototype or an early version of the type of large sort of very content filled areas that will come to dominate, I think, computer RPG design in the next like 15, 20 years after this game.
Yeah, absolutely. In the sense that there are... The vast majority of people here have something to say,
mm-hmm.
like even if it's only one or two lines of dialogue. And it's kind of tiered, and there's a quest to get from tier one to tier two. Actually, weirdly enough, in structure, it's a whole lot like New Vegas, in the sense of like trying to get into New Vegas, right? So there's the outskirts of New Vegas, and you got to like jump through some hoops to get into the city proper. And that's exactly how Vault City works, too. So, weirdly enough, there's an echo of this very area, I think, in an actual Fallout game that we will play probably in, like, 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, sort of, like, speaking to that also, I will say that thematically, this is an area that has more going on in it than basically anywhere we've been mm-hmm. in these games. And when I say that, it's not to say that... There haven't been kind of themes or ideas behind other places like Junktown in the first game or even The Den a couple episodes ago. The stuff that is happening in Vault City matters mechanically in terms of how you are playing this game.
Yes. 100%. Mm-hmm. Like, and weirdly enough, too, what I think is cool is that there are not that many quests here.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? It's not like there's like two dozen, like, go find
the talking rad scorpion.
Yeah. There's not a lot of that. There's like two or three big kind of meaty things that have a lot of little twists and turns in it, too. So tell me about it. Tell me about going into old Vault City, Outlander.
It's... The first thing that I noticed upon arriving in Vault... Well, actually, let's back up. Before I even got to Vault City, something happened. A couple things happened. The first thing that happened was I got a random encounter that was a bunch of Enclave soldiers in power armor.
Yeah, I also had this. I forgot.
Okay, yeah, preparing to execute some prisoners in the desert. And we don't know they're Enclave soldiers, right? Like, in fiction. Like, they don't say, like, we are Enclave soldiers. Mm-hmm. But that's what they are. And they have these prisoners, and they're trying to get information out of them. And the prisoner says something really sort of bizarre and overwrought. Like, I mean, he's getting ready to die, so I guess I can afford him this. But, like, the specific phrasing is something like, I would rather be dead in the ground than have the knowledge in my head fall into your superior's hands.
Yeah.
And then they all just get mowed down. And you can't do anything during this. Like, the game, maybe I was wrong, maybe there was something wrong with my game, but, like, you can't intervene, right? This is, like, a cutscene, right? Like, the game makes you watch this happen, and then the soldiers walk off, and they're like, none of this was your concern, and then they leave.
Yeah, it is really similar, like, bizarrely similar to Gorion dying at the beginning of Baldur's Gate. Like, weirdly similar, same kind of deal.
So saith the wise Alondo.
Mm-hmm. So saith the wise... dead farmer. And two here, right? This is the big tall guy in the middle is the big bad of this game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so.
It's just a little spoilies here. But very similar to the way that the big bad of Baldur's Gate is there at the beginning of that. Yeah, I also saw that. I also had a random encounter, too, because the, you know, that we talked about last episode, the trek between the Den and Vault City is pretty long. And I had one where it was a merchant. And I was like, oh, sweet, a merchant again, right? Because we've talked about before how cool that is, and they always have different stuff. And I went up to talk to him, and he was like, ugh, you're that do-gooder who's been running around the wastes?
Yes.
No thanks. Not interested in talking to you, buddy. And that sucked.
So, is that all that happened?
Yeah, that's all that happened.
Okay,
yeah, so. And then I left.
So for whatever reason during this play session, also like the RNG just went to town on me, and I was getting random encounters whenever I went anywhere. Hmm. So I got, you know, first I got after this, I got another random after the Enclave thing, I got a random encounter where I encountered some slavers, and they were being attacked by geckos, like a whole bunch of geckos.
Dang.
So I sort of like watched that happen for a while, you know, and as the numbers got whittled down, because it was a lot of geckos, mm-hmm. And also quite a few slavers. And something that was extremely funny about watching this happen is that, you know, the slave, like all of the NPCs have kind of their canned lines of dialogue that they deliver, like their trash talk that they deliver during combat. And one of the things that slavers will say is, you'll make a fine slave. Oh, so they're saying this to these geckos. the geckos are just like running up and biting them, and the slavers are like, you'll make a fine slave. So anyway, I watched that happen. You know, I took out the remaining slavers and the remaining geckos afterward. I talked to the slaves, and they kind of didn't really care. There was no real response there. But I did it anyway, right, as the principal of the thing. Mm-hmm. Then I left, got another random encounter that was a merchant caravan being attacked by raiders or robbers or something like that. Mm-hmm. Helped the merchants take out the robbers, you know, their den. And then I tried to talk to one of the merchants, and he gave me that line. It's like, you're that do-gooder running around the wasteland helping people. We don't like your kind here. And then they all aggroed me. All the merchants aggroed me. Dang. At this point, I realized the merchants had a few slaves behind their caravan. So I, you know, like shooting, like backed my way. I was like shooting at them as I backed my way out of the map, because at this point I'm kind of in some rough shape. Mm-hmm. And then I got to Vault City. And the first thing I noticed about Vault City was, wow, they have street lighting.
That's the first thing you notice.
Yes. Like, I mean, it's there's like a fence. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, there are, and when I say street lighting, right, they are like, it suggests something about this place, right? It looks clearer and sort of more, like, less built out of junk than any mm-hmm. place you've been in the game thus far.
Yeah, the first building you can see, because there's, like, a little archway you walk through, but the first building you can see is, like a pueblo, but with, like, space doors.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, dang, that's cool. And then right behind it, there's a bar that's made out of metal sheeting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real double whammy of what the hell's going on here. And right beside that, there's just a giant cage where people are being stored.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Vault City's not all it's cracked up to be, I don't think.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess the first person I talked to was the guy in the little, like, space pueblo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name, but he talks about how they have caravans, trading caravans that run in and out of town. You can join up as a guard if you like. They leave on the first of the month, blah, 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 blah. We had some sort of optional side quests like this in the first game as well, where you could tag along with a caravan and get paid basically as a kind of mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do that, but some of the stuff that you learn from him is that, well, one, Vault City does a lot of trading. It's a trading hub. And in particular, they trade medical supplies to the surrounding regions. That seems to be kind of their big thing, is they have medical supplies, they send those out, and they get various other things in return. So that's a little bit of lore slash set dressing that you get here at the beginning.
I think his name's Steve.
Steve.
Outworlder.
Outworlder, what is thy name? You may hight me Steve.
Yeah, so everyone calls, they call everyone out here who's not from Vault City, they call them Outworlders, which is very 1980s.
Yes.
Well, an Outworlder from the mystical land of Los Angeles.
From the mystical land of the place on the other side of this fence.
Out there, somewhere, literally right there.
And yeah, this is one of the first things we kind of learn, is that this is not really Vault City, right? This is the courtyard of Vault City, where Outworlders live. I think the first person I talked to who told me stuff like this was, there's like a little shack kind of up in the corner, and there's a woman there who has a name, but I don't remember it, and she's kind of like saying something about her husband. I wish they didn't take him, blah, 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 blah. You talk to her, and she's like, oh, I'm just, you know, worried about my husband, Joshua, who got in a bar fight in the bar over there, and he was arrested by the Vault City guards and taken to, like, the servant processing center or something like that. And we learn a
servant
couple...
allocation center.
Yes, servant allocation center. So we learn a couple things in short order from this conversation. One is that this is not actually Vault City. It is what they call the courtyard. It is people who are not citizens, capital C, of Vault City must stay, because they are not allowed into the city until they get citizenship through whatever means. Basically, they people live out here because they are protected, and that is, like, on the one hand true, and on the other hand, like, they mean it in, like, the mafia-style sense of, well, yeah, we're going to, like, the Vault City will keep the raiders away from you, or the Rad Scorpions or what have you, but also, like, you are, like, totally, you know, homo sacer, like, we'll arrest you at any point in time that we want, you have no protections under the law, and one of the things that we can do, in fact, is take you in to the city to make you a servant, capital S, which is our word for slaves.
I wonder, just, can you imagine a universe where Giorgio Agamben had played Fallout 2 in 1997 and had gotten to the state of exception and had been like, well, the best explanation for the state of exception is, of course, you know, the courtyard for Vault City is a place where the law is the law, except when the sovereign exception is made. In fact, they all live within the sovereign exception that can be extendable to all people within the wasteland.
Normally, I cite Aristotle here, but now... Black
but
Isle.
Now I'm at Fallout 2, 1997. Alone.
Yeah. So,
I like that our old Italian academic voice was, bah, bah, bah.
It is me, Giorgio Agamben.
Hello, stay a while and listen to Giorgio Agamben.
Quite a treasure you have there in that state of exception.
A town portal, you say?
Oh boy, into the weeds. So yeah, that's...
Google it. Google it, listen.
Google it. Learn. This is how we teach people with too much future. That's one of the ways that I very quickly found out that Vault City is not a great place. And also that introduces to you, the player, and also, I guess, the listener, for those listening, the kind of tensions that are animating this particular location.
Yeah, the within utopian slash dystopian studies, right? There's this phrase, and a lot of people have said different variations of it, but I think it's somewhere between Le Guin and Melville that this formulation appears, right? But I think Melville says the exact phrasing, but Le Guin said something very similar. I think in the 80s, but everyone's utopia is someone's dystopia.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have one without the other. So that's, you know, this is a kind of classic sci-fi setup, right? Vault City is objectively one of the best places to live in the wasteland, right? They got technology, they got medical care, they got power. You know, you're talking about the streetlights. They got water. They have all this kind of pre-war tech that hasn't been looted or destroyed, right? We remember back to Fallout 1, what happened to Vault 15, right? Completely mm-hmm. destroyed, looted, all that promise annihilated. Shady Sands is all that's left. So Vault City avoided all of that, but that is all predicated on a very explicit class system that is based in slavery and practices of slavery. Right. And so I think very classic sci-fi setup in the sense of we have to ask ethically as a player and as a reader and as someone who's experiencing this, is one thing worth the other?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are meant to say no. Hopefully we're meant to say no. But what is interesting is I don't think the game really gives us the tools to express that no.
No, it's interesting. It's kind of like the Den in that way, where like you are told that there is a power system at play here, right? This weird Darwinian struggle that's going on, and like the person at the top of the pile is Metzger, the slave master, but you don't really do anything about it. This is slightly better, if only because Vault City pushes you into the path of these forces more directly, makes mm-hmm. you confront them and think about them, but also, at the end of the day, you don't really do anything about them.
Yeah. But we're given a couple, like you're saying, a couple lines of insight into it, or ways of intervening here, one of which is Joshua. Mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about in a second. The other is Cassidy. Did you talk to Cassidy?
I did. Cassidy is the bartender at the bar mm-hmm. over by Joshua. I don't remember her name. She does have a name. Joshua's wife's little hovel.
Yeah, she only says her name the first time that you talk to her, and I did not write it down. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can go over and you can talk to Cassidy, and what he has to tell you is that it's really boring being in Vault City.
Well, it's both boring, and if you're like, well, that doesn't sound so bad, and he goes, well, actually, you Outlander fool, all the time, you know, the security corps, right, which is basically the police here, right? So the police are in here busting up my bar all the time. They're seizing all my alcohol. They're smashing people up, and in fact, Joshua has now been enslaved by Vault City because they were in here roughing everybody up, and he took a swing at one of the officers.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of ties these little things together. What did you do with that?
Well, I said, "Wow, that sounds really terrible." And Cassidy said something like, "Yeah, no, it makes you want like it kind of makes me want to leave." And my response, like, this was just so funny. I was just like, well, why don't you? Like, I'm wandering the wasteland with my friends. You can join up with us.
Yeah.
And Cassidy was like, yeah, sure thing. And so that's how Cassidy joined my party.
Yeah, his little barks he gives are some of the best ones in the game.
Yeah.
Just like the things that appear over his head. One is like, I hope my heart doesn't give out.
Yeah.
And the other one is like, if I were a younger man, I would explore the Midwest.
Yeah. It's really funny because what he says is, if I were younger, I would head east and explore the Midwest.
Yep.
Which is just such a, like, it's true, right? That's what you would have to do based on where we are geographically, but it's such a funny way to phrase that.
Mm-hmm. I just love the yearning for the Midwest.
Yeah. And I forgot something else. Speaking of barks, in our last episode, I don't know exactly how this happened, but, like, Vic got really sick, and I'm not sure exactly in what way he was sick, but he was walking around and just saying, like, don't think I'm doing too good, boss. Think I'm dying, boss. Feeling really sick, boss. And I was just, like, going over and, like, doing first aid on him and healing him, and he just kept saying it, and I have no idea what was going on. By the time I got to Vault City, he'd stopped doing that. So I guess he's fine.
I think he's probably poisoned. I bet.
Oh, I bet that's. I bet that's.
Which I don't think you can. I don't think you can fix that with first aid or doctor. We also meet, what's the guy's name? Ed, maybe?
Oh, yes. Ed, the Brahmin herder.
So that's this is really the most important little part of this area. Oh, so with Cassidy, I met Cassidy and got this opportunity. I said, Sulik, why don't you wait here? I'll come back and get you in a bit. And then got Cassidy right in my party. Gave him a hunting rifle with a bunch of ammo.
Mm-hmm.
Good to go. But yeah, so the reason that we come to Vault City, right, is that Vic said, hey there, y'all. I have where I got this Vault 13 gear from. I got it from this dude in Vault City. And so we talk to him and he says, oh, I don't rightly know where I got that stuff. And you're like, come on, man, you gotta give me more than that. And he says, well, I used to work when I was a younger man. I worked on I think he calls it the Great Rim or the Outer Rim or something like that.
The Big Wheel.
The Big Wheel. But yeah, so Broken Hills, all the way down, he says he found it down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is actually, it's interesting, you and I chatted during when I was playing this, and so I thought kind of immediately, I was like, oh, that's where we're going next. We got to go to Broken Hills. And then you and I talked about some other stuff, and you were like, actually, the way that we find where we got to go next is through a different mechanism, so I'm glad I kept playing. But is there anything else in this kind of outer zone?
There's a clinic with a doctor in it named like, quote, it's like doctor in scare quotes, Andrew. there's a few things that are weird here. He has like one of his little things that he says above his head, like not in conversation. He says something about how his dad named him after a pre-war comic book character. Do you know what that's in reference to? Do you know what's going on there? I have never heard of a comic book character named Dr. Andrew.
No, I don't.
I take it you're drawing a blank. You know more about comic studies than I do. I was just like, do you have any clue?
Are you certain that it was him saying that?
I think it was.
Okay. No, I don't know.
I mean, the other option is Ed.
I love the idea of and of course I have Dr. Andrew issue one. Someone in this is a great moment to call in the commenters. Someone in the comments, let us know what's going on here.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So anyway, yeah, Andrew's there. He has an old auto doctor, like a pre-war like doctor robot machine thing in the back room that is sort of semi-functioning. If you look at it, it talks about how it's making like weird noises and so on and so forth. Twelinor inspected it with her science skill, I think, and then got a better sense of what was happening to it, and then used her repair skill to fix it and got like 100 experience for that. And I think, well, there's also there's a shop out here too that you can buy some things from. And then there's a guy up sort of north named Smith who wants to be a farmer but doesn't have a plow. And if you talk to him about that, he says, like, oh, Happy Harry, the trader, had one, but I don't have the money for it. And then basically just out of the goodness of your heart, you can be like, well, I'll go see if he has it. And then you can go and you can, like, buy the plow for Smith from the trader. And you can like negotiate, like Twelinor like negotiated him down, because this is one of the things Twelinor does, is she's speech and barter. So that was another thing I did.
Definitely did undo that. That's not in Tonk. Tonk, if asked, could not tell you what a plow is for. You know, farming is simple, Michael. You just go out, you dig a row, you put a seed, you put it in the ground, you water it, and
you take a big sharp flat hammer, and you run it through the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Then you throw some seeds in, and then you use a watering hammer
to hammer it in.
Yeah,
but of course the difference is that in the too much future, with technology, it's about developing skills and critical thinking. And farming is not that, of course.
Yeah.
This is a long parody of Michael Bloomberg that I'm doing. to just appropriately date,
yes,
forever, for eternity, this podcast.
Yes. I'm sure whenever this gets released, people will be all about Michael Bloomberg. Because people are definitely all about him right now.
We're
definitely
it.
Not recording this after he has already left the race.
No, I'm so interested to find out if he does or not. We don't know yet.
Yeah, shout out in the comments.
Let us know. Especially if you are listening to this in like 2028.
Mm-hmm.
Like, make sure, let us know what's going on with him. just give it a Google. You can go then into the city proper, try to go into the city proper, but first you have to go through customs. Ooh. That's scarier than the ghost farm.
So you cannot, like, the vault city, again, letting us know this place is not great, if we've already got that strong indication. But they do not let people in without the proper paperwork, without either citizenship papers or a day pass.
Yep.
How did this work out for Tungsten?
Okay, so he went in to the customs office and said, excuse me, I would like to go in. Actually, I think there are some really cool things here. I'm not gonna clown on it. First cool thing. So you go in and you're talking to this dude named Skeeve. And he's like the assistant to the customs person. And Skeeve is like, hey there, buddy, if you want to be a citizen, you can. I'll just write you up these papers and we can go from there. And so I was like, sure. Here's an interesting thing. There are a lot of different places for this to go. But so actually, first thing I did is I talked to the gate guard to be like, how do I get in there? And they're like, are you a citizen? And I said, yes. And they said, where are your papers? And I said, I don't have any.
You can do this. This is so funny. You can do that so much in this area. When people bring up the question of citizenship, your response can just be like, well, I'm a citizen. Like, just for no reason. That can just be your response. And everyone is kind of like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. They'll be like, well, do you have your paper? And you're like, no, I don't. But so I was like, yeah, I'm a citizen. They're like, no, you're not. And I said, okay, fine. So I go and talk to Skeeve, and Skeeve basically gives you one option, which is, hey, you give me $200 and I will forge you some papers. So number one, I said, all right, sounds good. I get those papers. I go back to the gate guard. I'm like, I'm a citizen. And they say, let me see your papers. And I produce my papers. And they're like, they literally say, you were not a citizen 5 minutes ago, and now you're a citizen? What are you talking about? Give me those papers. And they take it from you. Which is amazing. I think that's really cool.
That is very good.
Okay, so second strategy. I go in. I talk to Skeeve again and basically threaten to turn him in. And you can, like, basically make him pay you some money. You can make him pay you, like, $300 to not talk. Whatever. Skip and Skeeve. You go talk to the real person whose name is something. I forgot. Wallace.
Yes, it is. It's Wallace. Yeah.
I wrote this name down. You go in and you talk to Wallace, customs officer. And he says you have to have two reasons. You know, you can get in to the city with one of two reasons. Number one, you need to speak with the first citizen, kind of like the mayor of the town. And I was like, well, I need to do that. And he was like, yeah, but her schedule is real busy. So unless you already have an appointment, I think everyone needs to talk to her, if you know what I mean. And I was like, all right, crap. Bummer. So how else can I get in? He's like, well, you can be a trader. And I said, well, I'm a trader. Sure. like, all right, cool. And he says, well, you don't have anything that people trade with. You don't have any ore. You don't have any pelts or skins. You don't have any of that stuff. So come back when you have that. So that's one strategy. I could just go skin a bunch of geckos and then come back and be like, I'm here to deliver my stuff. That's super good. There's also a third strategy. Which one did you do?
So I actually did two strategies. One mostly like by accident, and then the other just to sort of cover my bases. When I first showed up here at this gate, it was nighttime. So the customs office was empty. No one was there. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of like wandered around and I walked into a back room and there's a locker back there and it was locked. And Tuelinor is good at lockpicking, or good enough. So I lockpicked it, opened it up. There's some day passes. I took one. It was still night. So then I had to wait until the morning. But just to see if anything happened, I went back into the customs office and talked with Wallace. And he you know, gave me the same spiel he just gave you. Mm-hmm. Except when I said, like, well, I have to speak with the First Citizen. He was like, yeah, she's really busy. And I could respond, well, I have very important news. And basically you get into, like, sort of this extended bureaucratic way of talking. And I just, like, talked him, like, I just wore him down. And he was like, okay, fine. Like, here's your day pass. So that's how Twelinor got 2 day passes.
The illustrious 2.
Yeah.
Well, here, do you know the other strategy? So you have actually, we have now outlined, I think, all the strategies. The only other one would be, because I looked this up afterward. The only other one that we haven't, or there are two that we haven't mentioned, but the one that I did not do and that you didn't do is that if you've already talked to someone who has told you about the raiders that have been attacking Vault City, you can independently bring up the raiders with him. Oh. And that will also give you an appointment. But there's one other strategy. Do you know what it is?
No.
You take off all your clothes.
That's it?
And you're wearing a Vault 13 jumpsuit.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, holy shit. Vault 13? What? And they're like, you gotta go see the First Citizen.
I thought you just meant, like, if you're nude, they're just like, oh, whoa, a nude person, you're coming in.
my brain, my short circuits. No. But yeah, because underneath, if you don't wear armor, you're still wearing the jumpsuit. And yeah, that's what they do. They're like, oh, dang, you need to go and talk to the First Citizen.
Huh.
And that's another way of getting the day pass. So that's how I got my day pass, was being like, I'm important. And then that opens up a whole, like, that proper city, which is like a whole other thing.
Yep.
You have any highlights from this?
So there is, like, a little building labeled maintenance or something like that. If you go inside, there is a woman there, and I did not write down her name.
I didn't either. I don't think I wrote down very many names after this one.
Yeah. But she's there, and she's, like, working on something, and she starts in talking. She's like a kind of angry, foul-mouthed woman. Like, she's irritated about something. But because Vic is in my party, he comes stumbling in, and he's like, what? Like, it's you? And it turns out this woman is Vic's daughter. Yeah. So then the game kind of fades in and out, and then, like, I have another, like, weird little pseudo-cutscene where I have to watch them, and this is actually, on the one hand, it's nice. I like that there are these character moments, right? It's kind of Baldur's Gate-y in that sense that we're getting the sense that party members have lives outside of being with you and in the situation that you found them. So it turns out that Vic and his daughter have not seen each other in a long time. In fact, he essentially left them, walked out on them. And the daughter's understandably upset about this. And talks about how, like, mom went crazy, like, waiting for you and died, like, delirious, hoping you would return, making Vic feel very, very bad. And then she's like, just kidding, like, mom died of radiation. Like, she was glowing like a lamp by the end. Like, she didn't care about you, she didn't remember anything, she was totally gone. And it's like, all right.
And by the way, I got a quest for you here.
Yeah, by the way, if you run across a set of pliers and a wrench, I could really use those. So mark that down for later.
Yeah, I had a crowbar, but no wrench.
Yeah. So anyway, as I was saying, it's nice that there is this kind of color being added to your party members' backgrounds, but also standing there and watching them talk. And, like, no movement, right? It's just, like, the little dialogue things popping up over their heads. And I can't move. I can't do anything. Just reading this whole thing. In fact, this got to the point where my character, Twelinor, spoke. I did not choose to make her speak. Really? Just dialogue popped up over my head saying, this is taking forever. Will you hurry up?
But it's interesting that the, you know, we've already talked about the snarkiness of this game, but the snark is so embedded in the DNA of Fallout 2 that your character speaks unprompted. Mm-hmm. to hang a lampshade on the fact that, like, this dialogue is taking a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah, that happened. Did you happen to find a wrench?
No.
Okay.
And I actually looked it up because I was like, dang, I don't think I've seen a wrench in this game. Is this like some secret item? They become more common later, and apparently there was one in the vault here in Vault City.
Yes. No, I did find one. I did find that. Yeah. There's just...
I was rushing at the end of that because it was right before we were recording, and so I didn't have time to explore around.
Okay, yeah. So just very briefly, I walked around, like, next to the maintenance area is, like, a little shop, and you can buy a set of pliers there, no problem. But the wrench, there's, back in the courtyard, there's a little boy named Curtis who is upset because he lost his friend, his little doll named Mr. Nixon, which sure is a name for a child's doll. But he was like, I was playing with Mr. Nixon behind the bar, and now he's lost. So if you go around and you walk behind the bar, you can find, like, a little doll on the ground, and you can go give it back to Curtis. And at this juncture, you have two choices. One is you give it back to him, and you're very gentle, and it's like, here's your friend, have fun. Or you can dismember the doll before the child's eyes for literally no reason and for no reward.
What?
You can just do this. In fact, I tweeted this on the Range Touch account because it's such a funny, weird dialogue option. It just unprompted. I have Mr. Nixon right here, but you know what? I think Mr. Nixon should be punished for going off on his own. Some ritual dismemberment may be in order. So first, I'm going to pull off his arms, and then it trails off. So yeah, you can just, like, tear this child's doll to pieces in front of him. But if you don't, if you give him the doll, then he sits there and he, like, plays with the doll and they're, like, doing a little tea party. And eventually he mentions, like, should we go dig up Daddy's wrench? And that's how you find out that there's a wrench buried in a pile of rocks, like, near where you found the doll. And so that's where you get the wrench. You give that to Vic's daughter, and she will make you, like, a toolkit. Within a day. So that's that.
Jeez. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else is on this screen. Yeah, so I think this is also where the servant allocation center is, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's this, and there's also the police station. They're not police, but
yeah.
The corrections officer or whatever they're called. Did you do their quests?
I didn't, no.
Okay. Well, let me just briefly talk about that. Mm-hmm. So if you go in there, you can talk to basically the sheriff, and he's like, rah, 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 I'm bad and tough. And
wait, who says that? You cut out, I think, for a second. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you can go into the, like, police station, and there's a sheriff there. And he says, you know, functionally, I'm very tough and strong and no one can defeat me.
Classic sheriff line.
And you can, like, get into a fight with him. Tonk had a lot of options to be very aggressive in Vault City.
Huh.
But that just leads to a fight and you got to kill everyone in Vault City. Like, that's not
a
good game state.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't allow the game to continue in an interesting way. But yeah, so he gave me a mission and he was like, I just need you. He's like, well, the only thing you'd be useful for us would be if you had a vault or a pit boy. And I was like, I have a pit boy. And he was like, you have a real pit boy? And I was like, yeah. And then he said, I actually wrote it down. The dialogue option that I get to choose is it's old and cranky. And it seems to have wires and buttons yanked out everywhere, but it works. and so he wanted me to go and walk around the, like, world map around Gecko to the north, mm-hmm. in a big circle, and scout out all of those little areas. And so I did that, and I came back, and he said, great, now go to the New California Republic, far to the south.
Did you?
Well, I tried to, and I died along the way, and I just reloaded my game and said, I'll think about doing that later.
Okay.
Yep. So there was that. Okay. So that, but anyway, I'm assuming there's probably more quests for him too, because he wants me to go down there and go to NCR and just come back to report on the route. because he's trying to look for raiders. I imagine we got to figure that out later in the game. But tell me about the servants.
Yeah, so you go to the servant allocation center, and you can start asking questions about Joshua. And, well, first of all, you can just outright accuse the people at this the allocation center of, like, running a slavery operation. And they don't like that. That's another thing that, like, results in you getting banned from Vault City, I think. Or at least people attacking you.
Yeah.
So that's not a great option. But you can also start asking about Joshua, and you can be like, well, I think he has a disease. And he is therefore a threat to the stock of servants here. Which, by the way, there are also, like, little houses, like little Pueblo houses, and there are people in them. When you talk, like, they don't have a lot to say, but when you talk to them, it's stuff like, I should have a servant hose out the storage room. And then there are also servants who you can recognize because they don't get to wear vault jumpsuits, doing menial tasks, right? Like being housekeepers or, like, tending lawns or things like that. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the milieu that you're in. Anyway, you tell the basically the master slave trader or whatever, that Joshua has a disease, and he's like, I don't know about that. Like, he didn't show any signs of illness. And I could be like, have you heard of Twelinor's syndrome? And he's like, no, what is that? And I'm like, well, it's this very strange new disease. We don't know a lot about it, but it causes servants to be cranky and talk back a lot. And the guy's like, I have been noticing that more with the servants lately. It should be best to keep them quarantined. Like, we'll remove Joshua from the population. We'll have him taken back out to the courtyard. So that's how I got Joshua freed.
I did just participate in slave trade.
Wow.
There was just no way I could figure out. So I also had the disease option. And I was like, he's got a disease. And they're like, what's it called? And I was like, I don't know. I can't even think of disease names. It was like such a sad, like, I don't know. My only option that I could figure out was just straight up bribe him and pay $1,000.
Wow.
So I bought his freedom for $1,000. And he got to go back to his family. And weirdly enough, so I got a little of experience, and I got a little tooltip that was like, maybe he just told me in dialogue, he'll be outside. So I went back out to the courtyard to talk to him, and because I thought maybe there'd be more stuff. There was nothing else to do. And I talked to his wife, who got a little thing over her head that was like, thank you so much, here's a reward. There is no reward. I did not receive any money.
Yeah.
So, but that's okay. He is no longer enslaved by Vault City. I think that's probably good enough. Other stuff there. I think that's about. Oh, there's a street preacher.
Yeah, the street preacher whose name is Thomas Moore.
Yeah.
Which is like a very plausible name, if like somewhat. I don't know if it's intended, right? This is one of the things about Fallout. We always come back to the names because there's always this weird mixture of just like very general, plausible day to day names, and then like really out there science fiction-y names. The name Thomas Moore, because Thomas Moore, not spelled M O O. Sorry, my Tom Cullen instinct kicked in. I had a moment. I was going to say M-O-O-N, that spells Thomas Moore. Anyway, spelled with one O, he is a figure from history, right? He is a religious figure.
Referring to Saint Sir Thomas More?
Yes, Saint Sir Thomas More, who done got sainted on account of him being like, hey, maybe don't become Protestant, Henry VIII. Anyhow.
Sainted and knighted.
Yes.
Truly the historical EGOT of his time.
It's like, I don't care what you think about him personally. Sir Thomas More is EGOT. So, anyhow, Yeah, there's the street preacher who's talking about how, well, first of all, I want to know how this street preacher is able to say all of this stuff about how we need to, like, let people in, we need to, like, pull down the walls, we need to start sharing our wealth with the outsiders, we need to, you know, link up with the outside world. I want to know how he's doing this without constantly initiating combat with everyone, because that happens to me. But you can talk to him. And Twelinor, at least, like, can sort of wholeheartedly agree with everything he's saying, at which point he's like, oh, I'm so glad I found another, you know, believer in the cause. Listen, I have something I need you to deliver to a friend of mine in New Reno. And he gives you a briefcase. And you can be like, yep, sure. Whenever I go by New Reno, I'll give this briefcase to your pal. Yeah. And that's kind of where, like, that's where we hang, right? And this is another interesting thing about Vault City is we get quests here that are not going to be completed here in the city and will not be completed necessarily soon, right? We get quests that can be completed in a non-linear fashion.
Yeah, the game feels a lot like, and I don't know that we're at the midpoint, but we're probably at the one-third point of the game or something like that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that, to me, it feels like a lot like the pacing of a JRPG more than Fallout 1 did, in the sense of it's like, here's all the little pieces you need, but now we're in a hub, and it's literally in the middle of the map. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Vault City is, it's a little bit north of the middle, but it's pretty central, and we are going to get quests that take us to the north, the east, and the south. Mm-hmm. The south in two different directions, in fact. So, yeah, this is, you know, very purposefully kind of shoving us out into the world and saying, hey, here's non-linear game time, you know, time to start doing it. But we've been talking a very long time, so we need to talk about some of the big questy stuff. You can go and talk to the administrator, the first citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynette is her last name. I forgot her first name.
It's weird. She's one of those people who has like two names, like a first name and a last name, but they're both first names.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is, like, I don't know, let's just say Alice Lynette. Anyhow, she's not great.
Well, so she sets up a problem, right? Well, she sets up two things. So for me, right, I'm still wearing the vault jumpsuit, and she's like, dang, you got a vault jumpsuit? Who did you kill to take that jumpsuit? And I was like, well, look, I've got a Vault 13 canteen, too. And she goes, oh, my God, you have all the artifacts and relics. And she says, what are you up to? And I explain, I'm looking for a Gek. She tells me what a couple other people have already said, which is that Vault City used a Gek, but, you know, it broke a million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They used it to build other stuff with, and so...
Literally, it broke 1 million years ago before any of the game's events started.
Yeah, 1 million years ago.
So
she says all that stuff, and then she says, well, if you had access to the central computer, you might be able to know where Vault 13 is. And I'm like, great. And she says, well, actually, if you want to go use the computer, you got to do something for me. Well,
so the citizens, only citizens of Vault City can go into the vault itself for some reason. I don't know why they're keeping people out of the vault, but only citizens can go in. And she's like, if you were a citizen, you know, you could go in. And I'm like, well, how do you become a citizen? It's like, well, you could take a test, or, and then you may continue.
Mm-hmm. I tried to take the test and failed it, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no. You've got to have crazy stats, like on intelligence, perception, and I think something else.
But yeah, so she's like, all right, there's a nuclear reactor in a place called Gecko to the north. If you go up to Gecko, they're polluting our groundwater with mm-hmm. radiation. Mm-hmm. I need you to fix it. And if fixing it means, like, killing everybody there, go ahead. It's populated by ghouls. I don't like them.
Yep, so here's the thing. Lynette is an eco-fascist.
I mean, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, like...
I think maybe, like, at the bottom, maybe just racist against ghouls. Which is really, it's really interesting to me, in fact, that this game and Fallout in general does a move that science fiction loves to do, right? Which is you take in a non-existent population and you set them in in for like the structural position of a raced person in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. So ghouls occupy this kind of universal subaltern, people without rights. They're not treated equally because their skin is literally different, right? So it's all the mechanisms of racism, but without racism. It's, you know, anti-mutantism or something. And so, like, you know, basically the quest is like, do you want to follow the racist orders or you want to go do something else?
Well,
I followed the racist orders up to a point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I talk a little bit about Twelliner's experience here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so one of the things that was really interesting about what Twelliner could do is when I met with Lynette, I could... We've talked a little bit about the weirdness of the origin of your character coming out of Arroyo and like the tribal qualities that simultaneously are and aren't definitive of how you are treated by the world. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, when talking with Lynette, I could talk like someone from Arroyo. Like, I could talk like, I am searching for the Holy Gek. Like, I have come, like, I am the great-granddaughter of the Vault Dweller. And Lynette is like, the Vault Dweller? What the hell are you talking about? she has no clue what's going on. But, like, you can adopt, like, the way that, like, the Elder talked at the beginning about kind of the vault and that sort of, like, pseudo-religious mythologized way. Suddenly, I could start talking like that. And, yeah, Lynette is all, like, very confused. And eventually, like, you know, many of your conversations with Lynette can end with her banning you from Vault City.
Yeah.
Like, just, she will just straight up, like, you make her angry, she will ban you. And, like, I mean, ban. Like, this quest just basically ends. But then eventually, you know, I got around to the a couple of other things that I learned. There were supposed to be two Geks, I guess, that the vault that became Vault City was supposed to have, but one of them was missing. Instead, they got an incorrect shipment of 100 water chips, which is weird, I am told, because in all the times that our ancestors were in the vault, the water chip never malfunctioned. So that happens, and then... So anyway, I get that little bit of background info, and then I get the exact same offer that you just described, where she's like, you know, go to Gecko and do something about these ghouls and their power plant. So I set off to see what I could do about that.
So you went up to the power plant?
Yes, I went to Gecko, which, by the way, I don't think we made this clear. Earlier in the last episode when we went to MODOK, Joe kind of like promises that he can give you information about the Gecko, something that he knows about. It turns out what he knows about is the town Gecko. And he kind of like bashfully admits, like, I don't really know anything about the Gek. I just know that there's this town called Gecko.
Mm.
So you go to Gecko. There's a bunch of shacks and a big old power plant, and in one of the shacks, which has a sign out front that says, like, manager's office, you enter there, and who is it but our old friend Harold?
Yeah, Harold has become, he's now from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't remember him being from Texas before.
No, and his breathing sounds better. He's not as phlegmy.
He also, he's somewhere, I guess, I just said Texas, but he's somewhere between, like, a Texas cowboy and an old-timey, like, gold prospector.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has a lot of phrases he says, you know, a lot of, he tells me I cut with the dull side of a knife.
Mm-hmm.
Really cutting me to my core.
Yep. Yeah, he has a lot of things about, he calls you, like, smoothie. Everyone here calls you smoothie, because you're smooth skin.
I was like, Harold, you're gonna cut all my skin off? And he was like, yep, ha ha ha, I don't have my knife on me, ha 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 ha. Great, so funny, Harold. Jeez.
And then he has a tree growing out of his head now.
Yeah, so he you know, he used to have that little like twig growing out of his head, and now he's got like a straight up bonsai tree hanging out of that thing.
Mm-hmm. And when you ask him about it, he says, oh, that's Herbert. You know, I talk to him when I feel lonely. Just kidding. His name's Bob. Ha 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 ha.
Harold, you're so funny. But so we have that. And he explains the kind of whole deal to us. Weirdly enough, there's several different things to do in Gecko. I did not do any of them, but there's like a few different things to do. But really the thing here is that the power plant is all messed up. It needs a part. I did not write the name of the part down, but it's the who's it, what's it.
Yeah, no, it's technobabble.
Yep. And he explains like, oh, you know what? We got to go get that. We don't have one. Vault City has one. They're racist. They literally shoot ghouls anytime that they see them. And so we can't even have a conversation about how to, about if they have the part or not, but I'm pretty sure they do have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of he tasks you with going to Vault City and trying to broker this deal, basically. Another small thing here. Did you talk to the other guy in this who's hanging out with Harold?
No, I didn't.
So there's another guy there who you can have a long conversation with, and I think it weirdly enough, this is probably the thing about Fallout 2 that I remember the most. And it's like really poignant, I think. It's really weird, but this has been like locked in my head since I played this game, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. He says, oh, yeah, because I'm like, oh, you know, I'm the chosen one. My ancestor was the vault dweller, blah, blah, blah. And the school's like, dang, yeah, I saw the vault dweller one time. And you're like, oh, yeah, really? And he's like, yeah, I saw the vault dweller. I was in the necropolis and I saw the vault dweller running. And, you know, you really noticed when people were running because ghouls don't really run. We're not good at it. We move pretty slow. So it was, you know, it was easy to see him and he ran right by me. And then he says, you know, and I just wish back then that I had joined the vault dweller.
Aww.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, really? Why is that? And he's like, well, we know that the vault dweller, you know, he saved our water supply. Canonically did not happen in my game. But he saved our water supply, saved the ghouls of the necropolis. And then went on to defeat the Master and the Super Mutants. So he, like, knows all the stuff. And he's like, I just wish, you know, that I'd been a little bit more brave at that moment and followed the Vault Dweller to be a part of that history and to have really helped the Vault Dweller out.
Aww.
Yeah, and it's and like, I think you can snark, but, you know, as you can in every conversation in this game. But there are actually kind of a couple interesting dialogue options to end the conversation with, one of which is like, you know what, we all find our path in life, and you don't have to be you know, you don't have to save the world to be a hero, basically, you know, very kind of Spider-Man-y kind of thing. And the other one is like, thank you so much for telling me the story about my ancestor. So it's really interesting. It's one of the few conversations that treats ghouls as like these kind of people with longevity and long memory and kind of being the storehouse of world knowledge, as opposed to just like the irradiated people.
Yeah.
And you can explicitly have a conversation with him where he's like, yeah, I remember when the bombs dropped. And you're like, what? You remember what now? And he's like, yeah, it's 160 years ago. A lot's happened since then.
Wow.
And that's something that is really unfortunate, because it's something that I think completely drops out of like Fallout 3, 4, 5 or 3 Vegas 4 is like, there are ghouls in those games, but they're ghouls that are like always after a certain task. You know, I'm thinking about the New Vegas rocket ghouls and stuff like that.
Right.
They're you know, there's not a world. I don't know. They seem underutilized.
There's an untapped like poignancy to the idea of being a ghoul that later games don't really follow through on.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking of which, this just reminded me, one of the things that I learned when I was talking with Lynette, when I was saying like, I'm the Vault Dweller's, you know, descendant. And she's like, what are you talking about? And, eventually it's like, oh, you know, you kicked him out. Like you kicked out the Vault Dweller. You made him leave. And she says something like, well, we only exiled two people in the history of our vault. The first was, and she says some name, and it's just like, and he was a thief. He was executed. And Richard Moreau was exiled just after the vault opened. Richard Moreau, of course, is the Master, or rather goes on to become the Master. So good things do not come out of Vault City, it seems.
Oh, it's bad.
Yeah. So anyhow, yeah, I talk with Harold. I did not talk with the ghoul friend in the corner. But then I went back to Vault City to negotiate for that part that we talked about. Lynette, I'm interested in how this worked out with Tongston, because, like, Lynette is, when you go back and you tell her, like, hey, so it turns out, like, there's just a part that the ghouls need to fix the power plant and everything will be fine. She is furious that you did not murder them all.
Yeah, she's not into it. No, I could not figure out my way through that at all. And so I had to literally just, like, initiate that conversation and then back out of it.
If you keep going, she exiles you from Vault City.
Yeah, she's like, you can kill the ghouls. Get the hell out.
Yeah, so how did Tongston finish this?
I had to look it up. I have no, because I was up against a timeline or a time limit. And so I, like, actually ended up running back to Harold and, like, seeing if I missed anything and kind of running around. And so I looked it up, and the option I went with was going with the other counselor who I had already talked to before. But kind of the council of the people who operate the vault or Vault City. And he's just less racist against ghouls, basically. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, yeah, okay, that sounds good. Here's the requisition form. Go get it from the supply thing. I went and got it. I took it back and then worked on the thing. Is that what you did?
Yep, that is. I had talked to him before, and so I knew he was, like, the slightly less fascist person. And I went and I talked to him, and he was like, yeah, like, you can say to him, like, I think, like, I want to do this, but I think Lynette will, like, not give me citizenship for it. And he's just like, ugh. Okay, yeah, no, don't worry. I'll make sure you get citizenship. Here's the requisition form.
Yep.
Yep, so I did that, and I got the part, and I went back to I went back to Gecko, and I went into the power plant, which is laid out in the most bizarre way. It's so hard to get around, but the ghouls are all nice and very friendly, and they tell you if anything goes wrong, we'll know you were back there.
Before I even got in there, I wandered around so long in the junkyard. I went, like, down into the access underneath the junkyard.
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't scroll right. I never scrolled right on the first screen, and so I did not see the reactor probably for a full 10 minutes.
Wow.
And yeah, it is so massive.
Yeah, there's a junkyard here. There's another ghoul there that you can talk to, and I think there are some, like, sort of standing quests. But eventually I got to the reactor core, and this kills you. Maybe not surprising, because it's the core of a nuclear reactor. But I then managed to convince one of the ghouls who was standing nearby to go in and install the part for me.
I didn't do that. Oh. So Tongston has science as a skill, and there's a robot there that you can control. You can give it the part and control it and beep, 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 boop it all the way around the reactor and install the part. And I thought, here you go, bud. This is your time to shine. Could not figure out how to do it. There's, like, access codes and stuff like that. Couldn't figure it out even a little bit. And so Tongston just, ate an apple and ran around in the reactor and installed that bad boy himself with his own two hands. And that worked.
Good job, Tongston.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, you do that. I also got, like, a little side quest after that where the ghoul that I had installed a piece was like, oh, also, like, here's like, a hollow disk. Could you, like, take this into the Vault City computer and, like, get it optimized for us so we can run this, like, so that we can run the power plant more efficiently, I guess?
Yeah, part of a multi-part. Did you do Gordon of Gecko's quest?
I did not, no.
Okay, so in the junkyard, there's a guy named Gordon of Gecko, and he says he loves opportunity. And that greed is good.
Yeah, opportunity never sleeps. Yep. War never sleeps.
War's always sleeping. War used to sleep.
But so you can talk to Gordon of Gecko, and he says, well, did you know that Vault City, that their reactor was really only built for a vault? And that means that it's probably only got about 10 years left of power in it. because they're pushing it to support a whole city rather than just the vault. Huh. And I said, oh, really? That's interesting. He says, yes. Did you know if we could optimize, if we could increase the output of our facility and make it bigger, you know, get it up and running like we're doing already, and then optimize it, then we could just sell power to Vault City. And Vault City would be good because they could then expand. And then we would be good because we'd be, you know, have this economic relationship with Vault City. And so I think that is tied in, too, to this optimization plan. If you make the power plant work better, then you can create this long-term future. So I have both of those quests. I've not completed them yet. But I did sell the other, the kind of commissioner guy who we were just talking about, who doesn't hate ghouls. I already talked to him, and he's the person who like finishes up the Gordon Gecko quest, Gordon of Gecko quest.
Okay.
He's like, yeah, that does sound good. That sounds like a great plan for everybody.
Well, great. So after I didn't do any of that. I just like talked to the guy and he was like, here, get this optimized. I'm like, sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to Vault City and I finally went into the vault. Did you go into the vault?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Inside the vault, it's a vault. It is straight up a vault. It's like the best condition vault I think we've been in so far in any of these games. Yeah. And it is also primarily empty.
Yeah, not a lot of people in there.
Mm-hmm. And not even really a lot of stuff to do.
There's a talking computer.
Where?
The one you have to use to...
Okay. I thought you meant like a different talk. I thought you meant like a talking computer, like a sentient one.
It's just like
one.
Beeping a bunch of words over it and chattering away. So I think so you know which computer you're supposed to go touch.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go down to the bottom of the vault. There's a doctor in here too. He like, I don't know. He's just a doctor.
Yeah. Oh. I've been running around with like a broken arm for forever. Fix that for me. Finally.
That's great.
Yeah.
He has an assistant, who for no particular reason, and we didn't even talk about this in MODOK. So in MODOK, there are two people you can sleep with and then you get forced into a shotgun wedding with them. I didn't do this in this playthrough. I just remember that from like previous playthroughs of this game.
I did not have that option at any time. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the kids, the son and daughter of the Brahmin slaughterhouse owner guy.
Well, importantly, much like Solid Snake, Tungsten does not know what sex is.
Well, Twelinor knows a lot about sex, apparently. So much that, like, she just propositions people when she meets them. Like, that's just an option that I have. I can just be like, hey there, you looking for, like, let's you and me have a good time. And one of the people you can do this with is the doctor's assistant here in the vault. And it's like, hey, you've got, like, beautiful eyes. Like, what do you say we go out to dinner? And she's just like, I'm really, like, not interested. Like,
I'm at work.
I'm at work. And then one of my responses to that, this is, I think, probably the first time the game has really acknowledged that I'm playing like a woman in this particular capacity, is like, wow, it's good to see that same-sex prejudice is alive and well in Vault City. Bye.
Jeez, bye.
Yeah. So it's like, Twelinor, I don't think that's a healthy relationship to have toward attitudes. I don't think someone not wanting to sleep with you is homophobia. But anyway,
in the abstract, no.
In the abstract, no.
It is interesting that, you know, part of the legacy of Fallout 2 is like, oh, there's sex in this game. But maybe there didn't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it improves anything. I've not felt like I've missed anything by not going down any of those roads. And I don't know what would have been added by it. So,
yeah. So anyhow, yeah, I go down to the bottom floor of the vault. There's a sort of archivist slash janitor type guy there who's singing Maybe, the Inkspot song, which is nice. And when you talk to him, he has a stutter. When he sings, he doesn't stutter. And you can tell him he has a lovely singing voice, and it's very cute. You can also, like, insult him, because of course you can.
Yeah. the two feelings available to a Fallout character, saccharine happiness and abject sarcasm.
Yeah. Then you use the computer and you can learn. Well, this is one of the places where you can learn again the information that Vault 8 was mistakenly given only one Gek and 100 replacement water chips. The other Gek went somewhere else. But you can also search for the location of Vault 13, which strangely doesn't come up. You can't find any reference to it in the computer's archives, but you do find references to Vault 15. And so that gets marked on your map.
Yep. There's that. And also, were you able to insert your Pip-Boy?
No, but maybe I was, and I just didn't know how to do the right number of clicks to make it happen.
I don't know. It just gave it to me as an option. It's like, as you're preparing to turn away, you see that there's like a slot that's like Pip-Boy insertion slot.
Huh.
Yeah. Actually, it might have been after I took the Gordon of Gecko codes.
Mm.
Or no. It's the side quest we were talking about for the improving the reactor. And so when I did that, I had to go back to the computer again because I like looked around to see if there was a separate computer because it didn't let me do it initially. But I just had to click on it a second time and I inserted it and optimized that. And then it was like basically like, would you like to optimize your Pip-Boy? And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds good. And so I put it in and it's actually pretty funny because it's like basically it's updating and there's like a Vault Boy that appears on the thing. And he's like wagging his finger at you because it's like 50 years out of date. The software is. And then he's like, there's like a red ring and it's like taking forever and it looks like it's getting stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way at the end of it, it says like, would you like to reformat your Pip-Boy? And I was like, sure, let's do it. And then it added a bunch of information about all the other major cities to my Pip-Boy.
Well, neat.
Yeah. So it's a cool little thing, getting my Pip-Boy cooler. And then I saved the game and quit and then began recording this podcast.
Hooray.
Hooray.
And now we're in an interesting position as players, because if you kind of like do close association, right, you can assume that next you're maybe supposed to go to Vault 15. But really a couple of places, like many places have been added to our maps. New Reno is there. Redding is there. We didn't talk about Redding, but one of the things we know about Redding is that they're mining uranium and sending it up to the power plant and also, I guess, to Vault City. Broken Hills and Vault 15, right? We've got a selection of places now that we could go. And depending on how we feel about the main quest, which I guess we're probably still going to follow, as a player at this point, you have options.
Yeah. Yeah, a whole lot of options. And we'll have to figure out, because I think we're going to have to, do some artificial orienteering here to kind of keep us in the same zone. But yeah, we got a lot of options, a lot of cool places. And New Reno NCR, they're roughly equivalent in the sense of size and scope to Vault City. So I think we're going to have some really cool stuff to talk about, in the next 5-6 episodes or so.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. You got anything you want to plug here, Michael?
No, I think I'm good.
Okie dokie. You can probably hear my cat snoring. Good God. He's so loud.
Aw.
Buddy, you're loud.
Reggie.
He's across the room. But I don't really have anything either. You can go to twitter.com/rangetouch to learn all about what we're doing here. You can go to youtube.com/rangetouch to see other videos that we're doing. I got a new series I'm premiering soon. I got, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. I just finished up an XCOM playthrough like a month ago when you're hearing this. You can check out, you can watch me play all the way through an Iron Man run of XCOM Enemy Within. You can go to patreon.com/rangetouch in order to support this show. If you like it a whole lot, literally only $3 a month gets you access to the podcast feed, but you can give us as low as $1 a month. Patreon is bugging me. They're telling me, get rid of your $1 tier. Get rid of your $1 tier. It's so bad for you. I don't care. I'm supporting y'all. Think about it that way.
We're doing it for you, the fans.
Mm-hmm. We are telling you exactly how to give us money, and it's all for you. Think about it. You can check that out. There's some cool stuff if you some cool exclusive stuff if you subscribe at the $5 a month level. I think that's it. Next episode we'll be going somewhere else. We're not quite sure yet. You can also check out Game Study Study Buddies, which features Michael and I reading books of game studies and talking about them. The newest episode should be out right around this one is, so you can go to rangedtouch.com, or you can just Google Game Study Study Buddies to figure that out. You can also hang out in our Discord. All that's in the description below. We will see you on the next one.
Until next time, greed never sleeps, but Fallout sure changes.